Mr. President, distinguished guests, fellow delegates, I'm delighted to be here at the 44th Alliance Party Conference and to see so many of you, both old friends, well, older friends, and also new friends, so it's great to have you with us today. Annual conferences are the milestones on our party's journey, providing us with an opportunity both to reflect on the year past and also to look forward to the year ahead, and what an exciting year I think that's going to be. Measuring what we have delivered and also identifying where the opportunities lie for us to make further progress. It would be hard for me to look back over the last year and not take time to reflect on the Haas Talks process. At the very outset, I want to thank David Ford as party leader for putting his faith in me as the lead negotiator for Alliance and for party council in endorsing him in that decision. It was very much a team effort, however, and I want to put on record my profound thanks to Chris Little for his commitment and dedication to the process, and also to Emmett, to Kate, to Nuala, to Ben, to Christine, Richard and Duncan for their assistance throughout. To David and Stephen, who despite heavy ministerial burdens, really helped with that heavy lifting in the most intensive phase over the last 2 weeks, and with the preparation of our submissions, and I owe them particular thanks. Despite the stresses and the strains, the long hours, the confined spaces, the tight deadlines, in our team there were no raised voices, no hint of discord, except when Chris Little decided to serenade the team in the Stormont Hotel late one evening, but we'll put that down to sleep deprivation. I also want to place on record both mine and I think the party's thanks to the many individuals and organisations with whom we met in the run-up to the talks, throughout the talks, and those who made written submissions to the panel. People who invested hope in the process and whose hope was matched by our commitment to do all in our power to make that process a success. Whilst the outcome on the 31st of December was not the new year, new start for which we had hoped and worked, we gave the process our best and we actively engaged, and we did so constructively and in good faith. I also know that the progress made, whilst not enough, may yet provide a foundation on which we can build for the future. From our inception, Alliance's focus has been on building a shared and an integrated future. Our test in these negotiations was simple. Would these proposals move us a step closer or a step back? The ambition of the public for the talks was also clear. They aspired to a comprehensive agreement that would shift political engagement on all three difficult issues and end the uncertainty and instability which has blighted Northern Ireland since 1998, but which has intensified over recent years due to lack of leadership. We shared that ambition. We recognised the need for big steps forward to restore public confidence in politics, and that's what we in Alliance went in to achieve. Our tests for the proposals were simple. Would they help create a shared understanding of what it is to live in a shared society? Would they embed and strengthen the rule of law in a society where other parties seem to think the rule of law is a movable feast, applicable to others but not to them? Would they deliver the forward step change required in our political discourse that would move society forward? Our honest assessment was and remains that whilst progress was undoubtedly made on some issues, parts of the package fell well short of what is required if we're going to deliver a transformational step forward which people desire. Conference, we are realistic enough to know that in five-party negotiations, no party gets 100% of what it wants, and we were ready and willing to compromise on fairly significant issues. However, we were not, and we are not willing to compromise for a deal which, far from delivering our aspirations for a shared future, would actually set that cause back. The greatest progress achieved was with respect to addressing the past and its legacy. At the outset, the prevailing narrative was that agreement would prove elusive, given the complexity and sensitivity of the issues involved. However, in the run-up to the Haas process, victims and survivors themselves created a space in which genuine progress could be made. The moral obligation to address the needs of those most directly affected by the Troubles with urgency weighed heavily on us as a team and throughout the discussions, and continues to do so today. I acknowledge, however painful, that there are no perfect solutions to addressing our complicated, messy and bloody past. No process, however carefully crafted, will undo the hurt, the pain and the loss felt by so many in society. But I genuinely believe the proposed mechanisms set out in the Haas document, if implemented, would start to address with integrity and with compassion the needs of victims and survivors in a more comprehensive manner than is currently the case, placing their needs and their wishes at its heart. They also offer wider society the hope that we need not remain forever prisoners of our past, but can learn from it and build a reconciled future. It is a tragic fact that many victims of the Troubles may never receive justice in court for a whole host of reasons. That is something that we cannot change. But we can ensure that where justice is possible, it is not denied. There is a difference in accepting that justice may not be possible and taking steps to deprive victims of the right to pursue justice in cases where it is. There should be no amnesty. However, for many victims who feel that access to the truth about what happened to them and their family would bring healing, Haas offered a process which would allow those willing to tell what happened to do so, with the protection of limited immunity, knowing that nothing they said could incriminate them or be used as evidence against them in court. Again, we pressed for a solution which did not demand that victims give up the right to prosecution where new evidence would emerge from other sources, but offered the option, if they chose to pursue it, of truth recovery. Maintaining the rule of law in these circumstances is crucial if we are to ensure that our peace is one which is built on stable and firm foundations. That is why I am so aggrieved that much of the good work done on dealing with our past has been damaged by revelations about the tawdry and shabby side deals addressing the issue of the on the runs. We all knew this was an issue that needed to be addressed. Indeed, Alliance put forward proposals for a judicial process that would deal with the issue of the on the runs with integrity. Instead, unable to drive through the House of Commons what was a de facto amnesty, government set out on a process of side dealing with Sinn Féin with profound consequences when one of those wanted in connection with the Hyde Park bombing was able to walk free without trial based on a so-called letter of comfort. Not only did that deny bereaved families access to justice, undermining due process, but it also served to further undermine trust and confidence in the integrity of the peace process itself, from without and within. How often I can recall Alliance leaders standing on events like this, cautioning against side deals, not only because they tended to be driven entirely by expediency rather than principle, quick fixes rather than enduring solutions, but also because we recognised the danger that their later disclosure to the public and to other parties would destabilise or even derail the process down the line. How right they were. People rightly now want to know what was agreed, by whom and when. More importantly, we need to know what effect other letters, with their varied assurances given, could have on other future prosecutions. My own committee in Parliament will be undertaking a wide-ranging inquiry into the issue, in addition to the more narrowly focused judge-led inquiry announced by the Secretary of State. However, the real challenge is how we move forward from the place in which we find ourselves. Perversely, whilst the OTR issue has made any emerging deal from Haas harder to secure, it has simultaneously highlighted for us all the importance of having a comprehensive mechanism which will allow us to deal with these most sensitive of issues with integrity, with transparency and with honesty, placing victims and survivors at the heart of the process, a process which is also focused on reconciliation in our community. On parades and protests, some progress was made on designing new structures which could be more acceptable to unionists in the hope of securing their better engagement. However, Alliance has never believed the main problem with parades comes down to the structures in the Parades Commission. Could they be improved? Well, of course, but the Commission is not the cause of the parading problem. It was conceived to be a solution to a pre-existing problem, and during its time has seen the number of sensitive parades reduce. I firmly believe that if all sides would engage with the Commission in good faith, the existing structures would work even better than they currently do. If we are to deliver a new start to parading and protest, which people say they want, then we have to address attitude and behaviour. Sadly, the main sticking point during the talks and since remains a lack of agreement on accountability for conduct on parades, the responsibilities of parade organisers, and the need for a legally enforceable code of conduct which applies to all parades. These address directly behaviour and attitudes, balance the focus on rights with the related responsibilities, and recognise that provocative or sectarian behaviour is not just an issue at interfaces, but is unacceptable anywhere. For those who focus on structural reform, the challenge to them is which body, when it says no to a parade or a protest, will have its determinations respected and upheld. That fundamental rule of law question has yet to be answered, and progress cannot and will not be delivered until it is. On flags, unsurprisingly, there was no agreement to sign up to. Unionists refused to even discuss Alliance proposals to deal with flags on lampposts, despite over 80% of the public wanting it tackled. It was actually the most frequently raised issue in the Haas submissions. Too busy, yet again, looking over their shoulder and too much a hostage to hardline unionism to face them down on this issue, which bothers unionist voters just as much as Alliance voters. They opted out. Nationalists refused to compromise in the flying of the Union flag on designated days on all council and government departmental headquarters, because despite claiming to support the Good Friday Agreement, they still cannot find it within themselves to acknowledge the agreed constitutional status of Northern Ireland set out in it and the appropriate use of symbols of sovereignty which flow from it. Instead of agreement, we have a commission. But to what end? If parties could not agree under the chairmanship of independent member Richard Haas, how will they do so in any future commission? Further, that commission has the potential to keep this sectarian pot boiling for another 15 to 18 months, allowing one increasingly toxic issue to define and overshadow everything, including electoral politics, for the foreseeable future. Now, that might be the intention of some parties who seem to constantly seek out opportunities to exploit sectarian divisions, but it does not serve our community well. By contrast, Alliance wants to see the flags dispute resolved so that we can move beyond it to focus on important issues like health, education, employment, poverty. Instead of real progress, we have been offered more process, where the illusion of activity risks allowing some to continue avoiding tough decisions. The real divide will be not between those who endorse and don't endorse Haas. The real divide will be between those who actually live up to delivering on its promise. The complete and utter lack of commitment, energy and fundamental delivery from other parties on building a shared future, coupled with their willingness to continue to actively engage in the politics of fear and division rather than those of hope and aspiration, are a reminder that if political leadership to build a united community is going to come from anywhere, it is going to come from this room, from this party. Haas proposals do not represent the ceiling of Alliance's ambitions for society, but they are a foundation on which we're willing to build. We're committed to implementing what's agreed, to closing the gaps that are there, and engaging constructively to achieve that. But we need to focus on delivery and not on delay. Conference, those who threaten to walk away from the process should bear in mind the words of Abraham Lincoln. You cannot escape the responsibility of tomorrow by evading it today. These issues need to be addressed and need leadership across the board to give them the urgency and the priority they deserve. So in light of all of the negativity, the lack of progress, it would surely be easy to despair, to give up on politics, to disengage, to encourage our young people, the brightest and the best, to get their education and get out. Well, whilst I absolutely share the frustration and even the anger of the public that we haven't made more of these opportunities, I choose to channel that frustration into action rather than give myself over to despair. I grew up at a time when I was surrounded by the failure of politics. In the 1970s and in the 1980s, when politics was characterised by men in grey suits or in orange jumpers with subtitles, bickering on television. You might say not much has changed bar the jumpers and the subtitles. For all the human misery on our streets, it never occurred to me that politics would be a means of ending it or resolving it. The first time I realised politics was about more than that was when Maureen McConnell, who some of you will remember, advised me and St Christopher's Parish Church Choir to go to John Alderdice with a problem I had at university. After months of wrestling with the board, he resolved the issue in days, and more than that, he opened my eyes to the fact that politics is about delivery for the people we represent. In 1994, when I was graduating from university, I was faced with the choice which many of this generation are facing, to stay in Northern Ireland or to get out and make a life for myself somewhere else. That summer we had the ceasefires, which led to the peace process and all that has flowed from it. But at that time they represented only a faint glimmer of hope. Nothing was certain and it was not an optimistic time. Previous attempts to broker peace had been tried and failed, but I made a decision. I decided that change was needed, that this place is my home, that I love it for all of its flaws, and that the next generation frankly deserved better than I had grown up with. And more, I recognised that change wouldn't simply happen by itself. If real transformation was going to happen, it required each one of us who wanted that change to step forward and play our part in delivering it, and that meant me. In the words of Martin Luther King, change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability. Did I think when I made the decision to stay in Northern Ireland with the vague notion that I wanted to play my part in changing society, it would mean me joining Alliance? No. I come from a very traditional working class family in Loyalist Inner East Belfast. My father worked in the shipyard and my mother in the ropeworks, and their parents before them. My father was in the Orange Order and the Black Preceptory, and our flag went out on the 12th fortnight like everybody else's. That's the growing up which has shaped me into the person I am today. But I am not defined by my background. I am defined by my present and by the future to which I aspire. I, like Anna, will not be pigeonholed. Malachy O'Doherty asked me last summer whether people who knew me when I was growing up would have expected me to be the person I am today. My answer? Would they have expected someone from my neighbourhood to become the East Belfast MP or deputy leader of the Alliance Party? Probably not. But am I the same person with the same principles, the same convictions, the same core values that were drilled into me as a child? Then yes, I am very much the woman my parents reared. My desire and my passion was and is to build a united community and a better future for everyone in Northern Ireland, unionist, nationalist, and those for whom the border really doesn't matter. I wanted to be part of something which could deliver that change so badly needed, and I recognised that to have any chance of success, that something needed to be bigger than a collection of people who were all just like me. That something needed to reflect the breadth of political and religious views and backgrounds which make up Northern Ireland, but it needed to be united by a common cause of building a future together, not one segregated along orange and green lines. Only a few months later, because Peter Thompson called at my door and asked me to vote Alliance in an election and encouraged me to join, I found that something and I stepped forward. How could Alliance claim with any credibility to have a solution to the divisions in our community if we were not fully reflective of that community? That's why I chose Alliance, why I'm proud to be Alliance. If people want to fake indignation and outrage at that diversity and attack us for it, fine. It exposes their narrowness and it exposes our breadth. I was around when no one bothered to attack Alliance. We matter now, folks. I never thought when I joined Alliance that my views could ever really shape the party. But only a few years later, because Sean Neeson asked me to, I stepped forward with Philip McGarry and undertook the President's Review to strengthen our party structures, our message, and reinvigorate our local associations. Even then, did I ever think I would end up an elected representative? No. But only a few years later, because David Alderdice asked me, and in part because he promised me I probably wouldn't get elected, I stepped forward and ran for a seat in Belfast City Council. Did I ever think I would end up in the Assembly representing the constituency in which I've lived all of my life? No. But when the opportunity to stand arose and I was asked to do it, I stepped forward and I did it. Did I think I would ever be the deputy leader of this party and have the privilege of addressing this conference and representing you all as I do? No. But when Eileen Bell, who I am delighted to see is with us here today, stepped forward to take up the important role of Assembly Speaker, I stepped forward, took on that challenge, and I'm glad to have had the support of the party in doing so. Did I ever think I would be the Member of Parliament for East Belfast, going into an institution that for me existed almost entirely on my television screen? No. But a positive campaign, years of hard work by dedicated individuals, and a growing disquiet at the quality of representation which went before, made people in my constituency step forward and ask me to be their MP, and I am grateful for the opportunity to do so. Of course, there were those who said being a one-man band, a one-woman band, would make no difference in Westminster. But in my manifesto, I committed to ensuring there would be increased openness and transparency on party political donations. Whilst Alliance voluntarily published donor information, which is routinely publicised in the rest of the UK, we want to end the exemption in Northern Ireland. An amendment which I tabled to the Northern Ireland Miscellaneous Provisions Bill aimed at ensuring an end to permanent anonymity enjoyed by donors in Northern Ireland, and which was opposed by government and opposition to the point where I struggled to get tellers for the vote, was after significant lobbying on my part finally adopted by government and passed into law. That amendment was short of the immediate transparency for which I had hoped, but nevertheless, it is a major step forward in delivering on my promises. Only proper transparency around donations will allow people to see who major donors are and judge for themselves whether party policies are influenced by those donations. It was an important change to the bill, but more importantly, it shows that, as clichéd as it sounds, one person can make a difference. The reason I'm sharing my story today isn't because it's unique or special, but because I believe it shows what any one of us can achieve if we are willing to step forward and meet the challenge of changing Northern Ireland for the better. This room is full of people who, in different ways, at different times, in different circumstances, from different backgrounds, have seen an opportunity to reshape Northern Ireland in a more open, welcoming, diverse community and have grasped it. People like Anna Lowe, who wanted to see the Chinese community in Northern Ireland gain a voice and a place in society, and stepped forward to lead the Chinese Welfare Association in developing the strategies and plans to support local people of Chinese descent and aid integration into wider society, who recognised that her years of experience working with and for the Chinese community could be valuable in addressing integration more widely for other ethnic minority groups and indeed in our own divided community, and stepped forward with Belfast City Council on the Good Relations Partnership. I remember still the look of shock on Anna's face when I asked her to join Alliance and stand for selection as a candidate in South Belfast in the Assembly elections. Her shock wasn't that I was asking. She knew I was a fan. Her shock was that when she asked how long she had to think about it, I told her 24 hours. But Anna didn't let that daunt her. She stepped forward and she ran for election and won the right to represent the whole community in South Belfast with the same dedication and passion she showed to the Chinese community. And now Anna is stepping forward again to represent Alliance in the European elections in May. Despite the shameful racist abuse to which she's been subjected, she has continued to uphold the values of this party, showing the same courage and determination which brought her to the UK many years ago, sustained her throughout her work in community relations, and motivated her to get involved in politics. Those who Anna dismissed quite rightly as bullies can shout "go home" all they like. But I say to them, Anna is home. She is one of us. We are proud to stand with her, and we are proud to have her stand for us. So I don't give in to the Council of Despair, which says that Northern Ireland can't change, because I am surrounded every day by people in this party who, by their unity of purpose, deliver a shared future despite the diversity of their backgrounds, and they demonstrate that it has changed, and more, they're committed to making sure that it continues to change for the better. I look around this room at people like Maura and Jim Hendren, founder members of the party and active members to this day, who stepped forward then to form a new political movement and who continue to step forward as an elected representative, as an election agent, as workers, to ensure that that movement not only survives but thrives and gains the momentum necessary to deliver the further change we need in Northern Ireland. Are people sceptical that individual contributions can make a difference? Of course, we all are. But I know that it can. As Margaret Mead said, and Sian O'Neill paraphrased earlier, never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. I believe we each have the power to change things. It lies within every single one of us. In our social circle, we can be the agents of change. In our workplaces, we can be agents of change. In our communities, we can be agents of change. And in the ballot box, we can be agents of change. The power is quite literally in our hands to choose a different future, a shared future. In precisely 2 months, we will be voting in council and European elections, elections that will shape local government and our relationship with the European Union for the next 5 years. So I'm asking you, conference, step forward. Give us those 2 months. Campaign for our candidates. You've seen the calibre of them. Now get behind them. Vote for those in Alliance who have stepped forward and make that change happen. Together we can see the influence of this party increased, the shared space at the heart of our community expanded, the respect for diversity increased, our interwoven past, present and future recognised. We can see Northern Ireland take a massive step forward, but that can only happen if every one of us in this room steps forward to make it happen. And when we do, when we increase our strength, we as a party will also step forward and move Northern Ireland on. Just like David Ford did when we needed a justice minister in Northern Ireland so that we could put the final pieces of devolution in place. It was never going to be an easy job, but David stepped forward and has done a fantastic job for everyone in Northern Ireland. This year, again, he has stepped forward to lead this party forward, a party with increasing membership, with growing vitality, with an expanding youth wing and a diverse base, a party that is living a shared present and working to deliver a shared future. People for whom for everyone isn't an empty slogan, it is a lived reality. And I ask you to welcome our party leader, David Ford, as he steps forward today to set out his vision for us and for the year ahead. David.